Welcome back to the Godly Young Men Podcast, episode 124. We are really excited to bring this episode to you guys today about something that is highly relevant, I would say, highly useful. Of course, we always think our episodes are relevant and useful, but this one especially, we're talking about conflict resolution and kind of how to deal with conflicts between people. What are some general principles for trying to resolve the conflict, trying to get out of the conflict, trying to, I mean, as the title says, like resolve conflict here. Recently, what's been on our mind because of the pretty gigantic news story, I understand a lot of Godly Young Men might not be super into politics or the public sphere in that way, but in case you've been living under a rock, Donald Trump and Elon Musk tag teamed for the 2024 election, and we're kind of the, you know, you see those Hollywood couples they call power couples, yeah. Right? Of course, this was not a romantic thing, but they were the power couple of the election in the sense of, like, they teamed up together. Elon Musk was going to Donald Trump rallies.
Richest man in the world, supporting the most powerful man in the world, yeah.
Yeah, they were allies, essentially. A lot of people think Trump might not have won the election without Elon Musk, which is not all that out there. Like, it's probably true. Like, Elon's support was huge. They were aligned on just about everything. Of course, Elon's been working in the government, but to make a long story short, they have been in the news a ton lately for butting heads on some things. A lot of it was brewing. It was kind of simmering, this big, beautiful bill that Donald Trump put out there. Elon was not a fan of that. And so that all blew up, or it all resulted, kind of the dynamite blew up all about when this comes out two-ish weeks ago with some of Elon's tweets. Joe, get into kind of how the conflict really manifested itself. It was pretty rough.
To be honest, it was basically a masterclass in how not to have conflict.
Not to handle conflict.
How not to handle conflict, for sure. Like, it, man, it was horrible. I remember, I was just driving to a hockey game, and I think it was you or it was Jack.
Yeah, because I was at work.
And that's right. And sent it, and I was like, what's going on here? What did I miss, type of thing? And then you start looking at it and getting on the news, and it's just blowing up the news of Elon. And this is all taking place online.
They're kind of taking pot shots at each other.
And they're taking pot shots back and forth. Trump, for the most part, stayed out of it, but Elon comes out and says he claims that the reason the Epstein files haven't been released is because Trump is on the Epstein list.
Kind of like a mic drop moment of, like, here you go, guys.
Yeah, basically insinuating that Donald Trump might be a pedophile, type of thing. Like, wow, this is a guy that you were just helping. Rewind the clock a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, type of thing. I know it's been brewing for a little bit, but still, not good. And
they've been politically inseparable for like 6 months.
And all of a sudden, it was blown up over the course of a few tweets. A lot of conspiracies as to what exactly is happening. Oh, they meant to do this. This was just to get the Democrats to release the Epstein. I don't think so. I think this was just a very poorly handled conflict. And so this brings it to our mind. That's why we wanted to discuss it. Is, you have two of the most powerful men in the world. Like I said, the richest man in Elon, though I think he lost like $120 billion in stock is what I heard. Tesla and SpaceX and everything crashed because of it. Either way, I still think he's one of the richest men in the world. You had Donald Trump, probably the most powerful man in the world, and they are fighting like schoolgirls online, back and forth with one another, taking pot shots. And you can't stop Elon because he owns X. He owns former Twitter, right? There's no way that you're going to shut down his account, and so he can say whatever he wants to say. Trump can respond. Unfortunately, conflict is a part of your life. We have to know how to handle it. It's got to be better than the way they handled it.
Yeah, it's obviously our hope and prayer that you have conflict as little as possible. But of course, listen, if you live 80 years, 90 years on this earth, you're going to have conflict with people. And there's all kind of potential, unfortunately, outlets, I guess you might say. You can have conflict with your coworkers, maybe probably the most likely place. With your wife, again, hopefully that is few and far between, but there are going to be times where you're going to need to know how to resolve conflict with your wife, obviously with friends. You're going to maybe see things differently sometimes and have to resolve conflict there. Members of the church, that's probably been the biggest one that we've seen in our lives of like needing good conflict resolution skills. And so that's what we want to talk about today, is kind of how to handle it. Yeah.
And here's the thing. Conflict is not a four-letter word. It's not a bad word. It's not like, oh, wow, conflict, you know, we got to freak out. If we can avoid it, yeah, we do want to avoid it for sure.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there are times where it doesn't need to be avoided. As a matter of fact, there are times we might need to lean into it. And so that's what I want to get into. We have 7 points to conflict. We'll put together a fantastic outline here on
how... We both did. It was mutual.
Well, I added a couple things, but we'll mainly put this outline together on how we as godly young men need to navigate conflict, because it's not always a bad thing. And I think it kind of gets this bad rap where, well, conflict with your wife, wow, is your marriage not good? Like, no, I would say if there's no conflict in the marriage at all, maybe then your marriage isn't good, right? Like, you're naturally going to have conflict. It means you're not processing through enough stuff. You will find points of contention, and that's okay.
Still amazes me. We're 124 episodes in, and We are still finding things that it's like, we haven't talked about that.
I know.
You know, like, and we did the violence and aggression episode maybe 10, 12 episodes ago, but we didn't really handle, like, verbal. Like, that was more like physical altercations and that kind of thing. We have not done a conflict resolution episode. And this is the other thing I would say is, and I'll speak for myself, I'm no expert at this. Like, I am not coming from a place on high of, like, I've got it all figured out on how to handle conflict. But I will say, Joe, I'm sure you can speak to some of the things that you've seen in your therapy. I'd like to think I'm a pretty good communicator, and so maybe we have some good things to share. At least I hope so. And so,
well, in our collective roles, we both handle conflict. You,
yes, 100%.
As, you know, the operator or...
Operations director.
There you go, operations director at Chick-fil-A. Yes, Will's handling conflict. He's handling things back and forth, employee spats, things like that underneath. And so, yes, you deal with that. Obviously, as a therapist, I deal with conflict for a living. I do a lot of marital therapy. And so there's a lot of conflict in marriage therapy and just in people's lives in general. I've run groups and everything else, family. Yes, conflict is a part of life. And so as we get into it...
And you've kind of already introduced this first one, so go ahead and...
Yeah, as we get into it, number one that we want, once again, all godly young men to know as far as it goes with how we handle conflict resolution... It's not good to be conflict averse. It's not good. So hear that out. It's not good to be conflict averse, where we are always running from it. We're not saying that we should. We think you should avoid conflict at all costs, if possible, right? Like if you can avoid it, if you know, don't be the guy that leans into it.
If there's a path to avoid it, then avoid
correct.
It. Yes.
Avoid it. On the other hand, you don't need to be so afraid of it that you're not willing to jump in, say the things that need to be said, do the things that need to be done. Sometimes conflict is very necessary.
You'll see men like this who. Anytime a disagreement starts to come up or maybe things start to, you can start to feel a little bit of tension, man, they shrink into their shell. And it's like, oh, I don't want any part of this. I'm going to – and to Joe's point, like if there is a path you can get out of conflict, take that path. But unfortunately, there are times where you are going to – conflict is going to be inevitable. And if you're always the guy that, you know, backs himself out of the situation or just kind of removes himself, like that's just not a very reliable that's not a very reliable person to have around, first of all. But second of all, in the times where you need to kind of stand for what is right and not compromise on certain things, you don't want to be known as the guy that's like, well, he's just going to flake out because he doesn't deal with conflict. Like, there's two extremes here. You have the people who are always looking for conflict, right? Like, I'm a, you know, chip on their shoulder type of thing where they're always trying to, like, find something to argue about. Or, like, that's obviously very immature and not what godly young men do. But I do think the other extreme are these guys who... Again, just kind of go into their turtle shell anytime you start to have a little bit of tension. Sometimes when there's really important things at stake, obviously guys are guys, like there's going to be some tension. And what we are going to hopefully communicate with this episode is like we want to make sure that you have the skills and resources, I guess you might say necessary, to resolve the conflict, not completely avoid it at all costs.
Right. And that's what I'd say is maybe don't avoid it at all costs. Avoid it if possible.
Yeah.
It's not always possible. If at all costs, no, not at all costs. There are costs that are too high for me to pay for me by avoiding conflict. Like, I need to stand up for my wife and kids. I need to stand up for God, for the church, right? I need to stand up for what I believe in at work or whatever it may be. So sometimes when you're standing up for what's right or you stand up for what you believe in, even if it's not like right or wrong, you know, this ultra moral high ground, like sometimes it's just saying, no, I think this is the better idea. You know, you present something at work and they go, oh, that's a dumb idea. No, I don't think it's a dumb idea. You have to be willing to, I remember having this this conflict. My dad brought in a new CEO and for his company and he and I did not see eye to eye and I was doing job costing and helping him understand, okay, where are we losing money and things like that. And he just kind of ran me down one of his first meetings. I'd hardly ever met the guy. And he ran me down. Well, this doesn't work and that doesn't work. It's like, it's one of those, okay, I could just shut up about it and go, well, he's the CEO. And like, no, I've done this for a long time.
Hold up.
I know what I'm talking about. And so he and I had a conflict and I basically told him, you're flat wrong. I said, this is the way that it is. We've been doing this way for a long time. If you have a better way, go for it. But I said, there is no better way because I've developed this over months and months and months. So this is down to literally the minute per guy and per crew for underground water and sewer. I mean, it was a really detailed system. And he came in, he knew nothing about it. I'm not avoiding that conflict. I knew what I knew. I had developed
You didn't retreat
it.
Into your shell.
I didn't retreat into my shell. Yes, it's a new CEO. And theoretically, technically, he could have fired me on the spot. He didn't. Thank goodness he fired me later because my dad backed out of the company. So, yeah, sometimes it's not good to always be Mr. Conflict-averse. Well, avoid it if possible, but, man, do not avoid it at all costs.
Smaller example, and then we'll move on, but, like, very, very smaller example than that. The point I want to make is, like, sometimes you can learn a lot about yourself, about the other person, about debate slash argument discussion, if you engage the conflict a little bit. I think about our Joe and I disagree about like hardly anything at all.
Yeah, that's true.
But on our other podcast, Think Deeper, we've had a few recent like, you know, little disagreements on points about, you know, again, like nothing super important. But, you know, I think about like Joe, if we were recording that podcast and you had said something I disagree with or vice versa, and the other one just was like, well, yeah, okay, I guess if you think that, and then we move on.
Right.
But no, we push back a little bit. We, you know, you kind of share ideas. And obviously, again, that's not near serious as kind of what you're talking about, or maybe some church related stuff. But like, I don't know, you kind of sharpen your rhetorical skills, I guess, if you engage the conflict a little bit
more. Conflict doesn't mean you're going to lose the relationship. We've had these where you walk in. My brother and I got into a pretty big one on our other podcast. We went, members of the church were like, are you guys good? You talking? Like, we hit the gym this morning. It was literally the next day. Yeah. You know, we're fine. Went to the gym together. We're perfectly fine. Conflict doesn't mean you lose the relationship. It just means there's a little pushback. I like that point.
So let me get to number two. Yeah, so the first one was, it's not going to be conflict at first. Point number two, understand the objective, and that is to resolve the conflict.
Right.
That is
right.
The objective. And that gets missed a lot, in especially like church spats and even disagreements with your wife or friends. Like, a lot of people kind of, they're not going to say this, but the objective for them is not to resolve the conflict. The objective for them is to be proven right.
Right.
For the other person to admit, okay, you were right. Let me kind of bow down and grovel to you because you were right. The objective is not to come out on top. It's not to, once again, be the winner of the argument. The objective is to resolve the conflict. And right. I think that's where this is more of like a framing, mental framing, like a perspective thing of like, if we have a conflict about something and my entire objective and your entire objective is to get the other one to admit that you're right, that ain't going to get resolved very fast and probably not at all. Versus if two people take you and your wife or you know, for those of you who are not married yet, you and a friend or something, if both of your goal is mediation and kind of coming to an agreement about it and figuring it out, you're going to fare a whole lot better.
Right. This one gets lost along the way because you have to check your motives. As you're going into a conflict, you always have to check your motives. Why are we going into this conflict? What are we looking to get out of this? Because if you go in and your entire goal is to, once again, prove they're wrong, you know, make yourself look smart, whatever it is.
Which is human nature, by the way.
It is human nature. Of course you want to win the argument. And nobody goes into an argument and go, man, I hope I lose. Like, yeah, you do want to win the argument, but you have to ask why. What is winning? Because you can technically win the argument and lose the person, lose the conflict.
Win the battle, lose the war.
Correct. Like, those things do take place. And so when you are maybe picking a fight, when you are whatever it is, you know, maybe you're not being, you're wading into conflict, you always have to check yourself and go, what am I looking for here? Because if it is about ego or if it's being driven by, I'm embarrassed and I want to put this guy in his place, not the right reason to get into a conflict.
Briefly, and then Joe, if you want to get to number three, this is where Trump and Elon really, to me, kind of, and we'll get into it in a second. I think Elon came out looking way worse than Trump did personally. But the objective for them, very clearly, at least right now, or at least when this all broke, was not to resolve the conflict. The objective for Elon was to kind of humiliate Trump and embarrass Trump, and the goal for Trump was seemed like to kind of do the same, like to kind of brush Elon to the side and like, you know, calling him crazy and all this. Like, they pretty clearly did not have and they did have a really big disagreement about something, but you could tell their objective was not to resolve the conflict. It was to, one of them was, they both wanted to be right. They both wanted to come out on top, and look where that's got them.
Well, let me say this real fast. Anger drove that specifically. You can tell that Elon was just really upset. He was really angry. And instead of having a dialogue and taking that, I'm really upset that you did this. I'm sure they had those. He still wasn't listened to. Sometimes in your conflict, the person doesn't go, oh, wow, I see your point of view. Okay,
I never thought of that.
Right, let's change. Like, Trump's going, no, I'm still going to back my big bill, my big, beautiful bill.
I think
like,
you're wrong.
I think you're wrong. And it's okay. We have to make space for that. Even if we really believe in something, we still have to make space to go, okay, I didn't win him over in this situation. So don't let anger be your driving force. I'd also say it's kind of like with kids and spanking kids and such. Never spank out of anger. Like, yeah, naturally, you're going to be upset. I don't spank and go, wow, I'm so happy to. Like, no. I'm upset in this moment, but the idea is don't let your anger get the best of you and to spank mindlessly without there being some like point to it. And I would say the same thing with conflict is don't engage in conflict mindlessly. It's okay to be angry about something, but let that anger channel you to do the right thing, which gets us into number three. How do we resolve this whole thing? How do we resolve conflict? And first is to get curious. You got to ask them, like, you got to ask yourself and you got to ask them, why? Why do they think that way? As we go in, you know, whatever conflict it may be, and I work with this a lot in, as I said, marriage therapy, you have to get into the other person's mind and go, well, why does this matter to them so much? Because, man, we're just pounding on the desk like, you've got to see it my way. have you seen it from their perspective? Have you seen it their way? Do you even know why they think that?
And this is very hard to do if you are not used to putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. You see people like this all the time who you can tell based on conversation or whatever. You clearly have no idea how to see things from other people's perspective. This is a skill that, again, you might do that and still come away with the conclusion, yeah, I see it and I still think they're wrong. That's fine.
Right.
But you, at least to Joe's point, you have to get curious and try to see things from their perspective. And, you know, man, that's just really hard to do for a lot of people. It's like my way or the highway. They can't see things from anybody else's perspective. But yeah, this is a really good point.
So I've developed something called a communication triangle. And on the bottom is the what, and then there's the how in the middle, and the top, the topmost point of the triangle is why. The what is going to take the most space. That's why it's on the bottom, I think. It's what happened. It's he said, she said, back and forth. What'd you say? What did I say? Those type of things. But the two most important parts of that are how you are communicating with one another, mm-hmm. and then why you're even communicating about this. So when you go to resolve the conflict, you need to have the why and the how very solved for you. If you have a strong why, but you guys are just taking pot shots at one another, a lot of ad hominem, you know, you're just stupid or whatever it is, the how is not resolved. That's not solid. You're never going to figure out the what if the how and the why are off. And so you want to, if you're getting bogged down in the what back and forth, you got to ask yourself, why does this matter to us? How are we communicating about it? And why does this even matter to us? Once you understand why this matters to the other person, so let's say, take something like taking the trash out, you know, and they get really upset that you didn't take the trash out. Okay. Instead of, well, I took it out last Thursday, instead of doing that back and forth, we can do that all day long, and then people try to bring me into it as a therapist, like, well, whose side are you on? Like, guys, I wasn't there. I'm not God. I don't know what took place. Yeah. I don't really care what took place. I want to know how we're going to resolve this. Why does it matter to you so much? I'm hurt that you have failed to take the trash out because it feels like you don't care about what I ask you to do. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Right now we're understanding why this matters. So
it's more productive that way.
You also had something. I want you to speak real briefly before we get into point number four on this idea of compromise sometimes being necessary.
Yeah, I think you need to know when to give ground and know when not to. Specifically, this is going to come into play with conflict with like your wife or with your friends. Like, listen, there are certain things that you are just going to have to learn. It is not the most important thing for me to die on this hill. Some things there are, and I'll get to that in a second, but some things are just not. And man, arguments and conflicts are really slow to get resolved if you're like, I'm not yielding an inch of ground on this. And that's where, once again, specifically with you and your wife or you with a close friend, where it's like, I really want to get this conflict resolved. You need to know when to compromise a little bit. You need to know when to kind of yield some ground. But on the other side of that, and this is what compromise is all about, there are times when you don't need to do that. There are certain times where it's like, listen, I see your perspective. I hear you. I just truly don't think we can go that route. And again, there's a million examples of what this could be. But this is once again kind of a skill that you're going to have to just develop, unfortunately, not practice. That sounds poorly, but or that sounds bad. But like, you know, over time, you'll see, okay, I think I can yield a little bit of ground here. This is maybe not quite as important or whatever versus this really important side of it. It's like, I cannot yield any ground there. Specifically with, you know, doctrinal disagreements or stuff like that within the church, that's a little bit different. But with your wife, with a friend, compromise, I think, is really important.
There's a big part of this that's validation. They want to know that you heard them. If you can't respond, because I'll have people do this, what'd you hear them say? Well, they just said that they hate me. Like, whoa, 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 time out. That's not at all what they...
Like putting words in their mouth almost.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like, validate it. And this is what you're getting to in knowing when to give ground and when not to is like, even if you don't go to give ground, let's say something doctrinal, it's okay to validate. Okay, I see how you get there. I see your point. Those little phrases really, really help. That it seems and I feel like and things like that can help in the regular conflicts. When it comes to scripture, when it comes to doctrine, there's no it seems. It's like...
It either is or it isn't.
Right. Yeah. The way I read it is this. Now, I always say the way I read it is, and you throw it out there because if I go, well, this is the way that it is, they read it completely differently. And they'd say, well, this is the way that it is. And it's like, who's right? The way I read it is this, and let me build out my argument here, but I can validate. And we actually had this on the Discord, a couple guys arguing, going back and forth, just, I think, real good discussion on baptism recently. So make sure to join our Discord, and you can read all about it there. But I think they handled it well. There's times where, no, we're not going to necessarily give ground on baptism, things like that. But I think it's okay to validate and go, okay, I see how you got
there. And this is your benefit of the doubt point as well.
And this gets into the benefit of the doubt, which is, I'm going to assume that both are coming with an honest point of view. Same thing in marriage. Please give your wife the benefit of the doubt. If you are looking at it going, no, she's trying to hurt me, you got bigger fish to fry. You've got to figure out, why am I not giving her the benefit of the doubt, and why do I think she's actually trying to hurt me in this moment? So work through it. But by and large, man, people aren't trying to hurt you. They're not trying to cheat you. They're trying to come to this conflict with their own idea. Give them the benefit of the doubt and realize they're a good person, so I'm going to treat them as a good person.
So that was kind of 3 points within the third point, which is basically how to resolve conflict and kind of some practical things. Number four is going to be a kind of a rant of mine. Joe, I'm sure you've got some thoughts.
I'll let you take this one, but not as good.
Then, Joe, if you want to either comment and then move us into number five, because I know we got to roll. Number four, stop taking your conflicts online. This is something that was very evident to me in the Trump and Elon thing. Not to keep bringing it back to that, but that's, you know, kind of the framework for the episode. It's on our mind. It just came out. I was reading a lot of it, and again, it was a lot of it was Elon. Trump was putting some stuff out on Truth Social and kind of responding via digital media, not as much as Elon, but they were both doing it. It just came across so childish. Yeah. It just came across, and I think your brother made this point in his video, like, it ain't like y'all don't have each other's phone number.
Right.
You know, like, it ain't like y'all can't get a hold of each other any other way, but you could just see them, you know, taking pot shots and jabs at each other. And this is where you'll see this quite a bit in specifically, I hate to keep using the phrase doctrinal disagreements, but like disagreements with church people or even with friends. Like, first of all, the subtweeting culture that unfortunately millennials, I think, really developed because they were very online of like, you're going to put something out there that doesn't name any names.
Right.
It's not, it's just, it's very, it's not, it's very generic, not specific, but anybody who knows the situation is like, they are
just specific enough.
They are tweeting or they are posting to take a shot at XYZ person. Yeah. That is super immature. Obviously, getting on, like, taking your argument online, like, going and kind of trying to bash somebody online is immature. But, I don't know, the subtweeting thing is what really sticks out to me of, like, I'm going to post this very, you know, kind of innocuous, innocent-seeming post that is very targeted and aimed towards somebody else. Kind of, it's just a passive-aggressive way to argue. I don't know, man. It just comes across to me as very childish and immature to take your arguments online.
The cattiness is very feminine. I'm sorry to
say.
It
is, yeah. That's a good way to look
at it. It's just very feminine. Like, that's not what men do. Men handle conflict, even if there's a punch thrown. Like, I'm not saying we do that. But even if that's a way men handle conflict, this hiding behind the keyboard and subtweeting somebody, taking pot shots from 1,000 miles away because nobody – what are the consequences of that? Like, would you say that to their face? Would I actually
probably
get
not.
On? Probably not. Okay, well, then don't say it online. So I don't have much to add. I think that's a great point. Point number five, don't be disingenuous. These ad hominem attacks, which just means that you're attacking their character. Well, you're stupid, or well, you just don't understand anything. You know, you're ignorant of this. Like, you are attacking this person's character. You're attacking their characteristics and who they are.
You'll see this, sorry, briefly.
Yeah,
like,
go
in,
for it. Go
in
for
the,
it.
Like, debates that have, like, racial implications of like, well, you can't say that because you're a black man or a white man or whatever. It's like, really? That's what we're going to resort to?
Right.
It's just dumb.
Right. And it goes with the straw man or hyperbole. You know, these are the different...
So you're saying you hate women. Like that kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Of course I'm not saying that.
Yeah, the logical fallacy. Like, you saw that the Jordan Peterson one. Wow, you're really against women. Like, you fundamentally misunderstood what you're saying. And that's obviously a very well-known interview. So if you haven't seen it, go look up Jordan Peterson's interview with a feminist and it will come up because... So you're saying that you hate women is pretty much how she said it. Like,
is that
no,
what I said?
That's
very intentional and pretty malicious.
Right.
You'll see that a lot of like, okay, if I can quote them and say, so you're saying this, but they purposely misquote it to make the other person sound horrible. That's exactly what happened there. You see, again, this is something that is a very malicious rhetorical tactic. So you're saying you hate women, or so you're saying black people are inferior, or so you're saying that you know, fill in the blank. It's like, I never said that, but you're saying that to embarrass and humiliate me and get everybody to side with you, even though that's not what I said.
Right. You're taking the emotional side of it, and you're taking the emotional high ground in that moment. I can't believe that you'd say that. Like,
the gun control debate's another one, like another interview long time ago, Ben Shapiro and Piers Morgan, before Piers Morgan actually kind of went a little base and
crazy.
Conservative.
Yeah,
but Piers Morgan was basically like, so you're okay with you know, little kids getting shot in schools,
like
that type of thing.
Right, it's a false equivalency. Like,
yes.
No, I'm not. I'm not okay with that, but I'm also not okay with violating the Second Amendment, right? So... You're purposely misquoting the other person. And we talk about giving the benefit of the doubt. This is the exact opposite.
Yep.
You are trying to cast them in a negative light. Once again, a disingenuous, like that word, that disingenuous way of arguing where you're not trying to understand the other person's point of view. You're certainly not trying to hit the objective, point number two, right? You're certainly not trying to solve the conflict. You are trying to humiliate the other person by purposely getting it wrong, purposely misquoting what they're saying. And then they're forced to defend themselves. People don't like always having to defend themselves,
yeah.
Especially against things that they didn't say. So listen. There's active listening where if you can't repeat back to them, and there's some, and I can't remember who said it, but there's a quote that was basically like, don't speak back to the other side until you can quote their side
better than they can,
or in a way that they would be comfortable spouting themselves. Which means you're steel man in the argument, opposite of straw man. You want to be able to say, okay, here's the atheist point of view. Mm-hmm. I think atheism believes there's no God because of boom, 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 boom. Would you agree with that? And the atheist would go, yeah, I think that's a solid summation. Perfect. Now let's go deal with it. Yeah. Rather than, you know, some cheap thing of, you know, well, you, because you just don't understand about evolution or whatever it may be. They do the same thing to us, and it drives me nuts. So please try to be genuine in your approach. Get us to number six.
Number six, know when to part ways. This is an unfortunate one. You're not always going to be able to resolve the conflict. Right. That's just the reality. I think of Paul and Barnabas in the New Testament. They had a pretty sharp disagreement about John Mark, is what it would seem, not to get into it too much, but essentially Barnabas wanted to bring John Mark with him. Paul did not. And the text says the contention became so sharp that they went their separate ways. And from what we can tell, there was never really any major reconciliation. We don't know that for sure. I guess that's speculation. But there's not... Go ahead.
Well, no, there is... The way that they look at it is, yes, John Mark deserted them. Paul was very, very upset. Barnabas and John Mark were related.
Cousins or something, right?
Barnabas stood up for his cousin and said, we need to have him. And Paul's like, the guy deserted us. Yeah, absolutely not. We're out. That's why in the second missionary journey, he goes with Silas. Later, I think it's in 2 Timothy, he does tell
positively
Timothy...
Of,
yes, to greet John Mark, meaning, speculatively, that yes, they have made amends at some point, somewhere down the line, where Paul is saying to greet John Mark, because 2 Timothy is his last known book before he gets beheaded.
But the point is, they did part ways. Like,
correct.
The contention became so sharp, the scripture said they parted ways, and that seemed to be in the New Testament not a scriptural thing. Unfortunately, there will be times when somebody just goes off the deep end in such a way as like, listen, man, we can't resolve this. This is not something. Now, a lot of people in the church will want to do that for stuff that does not rise to that. Like, oh, we disagree about a third, secondary level issue. Yeah. We just got to part ways. Like, that's very immature as well. But sometimes, listen, your buddy's like, hey, I really think that my wife is going to go to preaching school. Like, I think we're going to have to part ways on that. Or I think homosexuality is okay, or whatever it is. There's all kind of things like that. If you have fundamental differences in belief, if you compromise values, so that'd be another one. Like, I really think homosexuals are not in sin, or...
My boy wants to become a girl, and very emotional for them, right? It's a very emotional argument, and that's the temptation to go, man, you know, I don't want to lose a friend here, and I want to be nice, I want to be supportive of everything going on. Like, there's times to part ways. There's times to just say, yeah, as you said, the conflict cannot be resolved in this situation. If they're not willing to sway, you got to be careful. My dad's friend had and I think I've talked about it before, the tyranny of emotion, which is whoever gets the most emotional basically wins. Once you get emotional, or you bring a lot of emotion into it, there's a tyrannical element to it of like, nobody can speak against the woman who is ranting about, you know, LGBTQ, and she's highly, highly emotional. Like, she wins the argument because everybody else just, it shuts them down. You got to be careful of that. But let's just say, even if that's not the case, sometimes you got to part ways because there's too much emotion involved and, you know, the other person's not coming down. Sometimes it's a very good back and forth discussion. Not a lot of emotion. It's just a conflict between us on some doctrinal debate. The emotion doesn't have to get involved for us to go, you know what, I think we see things differently. We don't believe in word only, Holy Spirit. You were just doing a great study on this. We believe in the physical or the personal, and physical indwelling of the Holy Spirit, not in a miraculous way, the charismatic, but we do believe in that. There are certain people we're not going to necessarily get along with, and that, yeah, we don't talk to a ton because of our views and the way that we differ and the way that they view us in that way. So that's okay. I'm not coming off my belief. I'm not saying that I'm going to go in and start a conflict for sure. On the other hand, you have to know when to part ways and to say, we're not going to see eye to eye on this.
Last point on this, Joe, and then get us into number seven, is sometimes a conflict reveals something about someone to where it is actually in your best interest to part ways. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, whether it be due to, just natural, the way life goes, this person's going this direction, maybe a little bit more liberal or, conservative or socially or scripturally, or just developing some bad character traits, hanging out with the wrong people, whatever, where it's like, oh, my life, my family's life, my kid's life is actually probably going to end up worse if I try to pursue this relationship. And so I'm not going to hold any ill will. I'm not going to wish ill on you or anything like that. At the same time, let's agree, disagree, and go our separate ways. Sometimes that is going to be the healthier option. Hopefully not often, but man, sometimes I do think you can look at the future health of your family, your kids, or whatever, and be like, my life's actually going to be better without this person. And that's not an arrogant or a wrong thing to say.
Right.
If the person has some of those character traits that, again, conflict can reveal, like, I did not know that about that person.
Yeah. That's a great point. That's a really, really needed point as well. So number seven, finally, last but not least, be a man of peace. This is a basic one. We initially had the six. We wanted to end on a positive note, because, yes, parting ways sometimes it's a sad thing. We wanted to end on the positive note of just saying, be a man of peace as far as it depends on you.
That's Romans 12.
Yeah, it's Romans 12 as well. I mean, as far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men, right? Like, we want to be, as Christians, we want to be men of peace. Don't be the hothead getting into every conflict. And my dad used to say, like, consider, or his mom, my grandma used to say, who's a common denominator, right? If
that's a good point.
You are always at the center of every conflict in your life. Who's the common denominator here? Take a step back, look at it from that 10,000-foot view and say, look in the mirror and determine, man, I am into a lot of conflicts. And if that's you, maybe you need to do something about that. Maybe you need to change and realize I'm not a man of peace. As a matter of fact, everybody around me is in conflict with me. I'm the common denominator. If you are looking at it going, he's a problem, and she's a problem, and he's a problem, and he's a problem, consider the story. Like, go back to, hey, maybe I'm the problem here. What do we do about it? We go back to the other steps of how do we resolve these things, getting curious, seeing it from the other person's point of view, walking in their shoes. But as much as it depends on you, be a man of peace who seeks peace with other people.
This is one of Joe's additions, and I'm really glad he added it, because, man, there is nothing worse than the person who, as you put it, kind of, they just find themselves in a lot of conflicts. And it's like, man, how does this keep happening? Maybe because you're looking forward a little bit. Maybe right. Because you're just unwilling to budge on, unwilling to compromise on anything. Like, you are just Mr. Rigid about everything. Because you meet those people, Joe, I very much think that you're one of these type of people who you are very enjoyable to be around, because, and it's not because you yield ground on everything, but it's just like, you're not looking to start a fight with people. You're very much being a man of peace, being kind of good natured is what I think of. Like, you're just kind of good natured, right? You can have a discussion, you can maybe push back and argue and debate a little bit, but you're also not going to get your feelings hurt. You're not going to, you know, get all defensive. Like, just, I love this point. Just be a man of peace as much as it depends on you. The way that I would put it is, look for a reason to not start the conflict, as opposed to looking for a reason to start the conflict. Some people look for reasons to start. Be the guy who's looking for reasons to avoid the conflict, I guess is the best way to put that. So,
and their bookends, we put this as kind of bookends, almost in a chiastic structure working toward it. 1 and 7 do go together. Like, we're not supposed to avoid it at all costs. We avoid it as much as possible. We want to be a man of peace as much as possible. We realize those two things go together, though. Sometimes you're going to need to be in conflict. That's okay. Mm. Conflict's not a four-letter word. On the other hand, yeah, don't always be looking for it. It doesn't make you weak because you're not always going around with a chip on your shoulder ready to just debate whoever, ready to get into it. Like, be a man of peace and let people know, hey, that's a good guy to talk to, because he is probably going to see it from your point of view, those type of things. That's really important. And so that's where we wanted to end on this is, yes, conflict is important. It's necessary sometimes. But it's also important to just be peaceful, as we are called to be peaceful as Christians.
Great way to wrap. Appreciate you guys very much for listening. If you've got thoughts on this, as I'm sure you do, if you're in the Discord, please let us know. If you're not, comment on the video and kind of let us know your thoughts. If we missed something that's really helped you in conflict resolution. Don't be like Trump and Elon. You learn from their example. They're not the only example, of course. They're just the most recent one. So hopefully this was helpful for you. We will be back next week, as always, for episode 125 of the Godly Young Men podcast. Thanks so much.